Welcome to the Power Is Now Radio. Your host and founder of the Power Is Now Incorporated, Eric Frazier.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Power Is Now. My name is Eric Frazier. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for finding us on Blog Talk Radio and The Power Is Now Facebook Live. Today, we have a special guest, Caroline Peet. We're going to be talking about a lawsuit, folks, a lawsuit that's filed against Deutsche Bank, Altisource, and Ocwen. So Caroline is going to get into the details of that. In the meantime, for those of you who are joining us, thank you. Please share the link. The information we're going to share today, I think everybody needs to know about. And I appreciate the hard work that Caroline does, as well as other fair housing agencies across the country, in helping to ensure that our rights are being protected. My name is Eric Frazier. I'm the president and CEO of The Power Is Now, and The Power Is Now is a media company that began in 2009. And if you go to our website, thepowerisnow.com, you can learn more about us. In fact, our mission statement is there, our vision statement. In fact, on the homepage, you can see our magazine. The Power Is Now magazine has been around since really November of 2013. 2013, we've been publishing a magazine, a national magazine. And then The Power Is Now Radio has been around since 2011. We started in 2009 as a teleconference. And we've been doing now Facebook Live for the last year. And folks, it's been a wonderful venue to get the word out about what's going on in real estate, the opportunities to buy, sell, to get financing of real estate, and to make homeownership dreams a reality. That's our mission. That's what we're all about. We make the American dream of homeownership a reality. Now, we are a licensed real estate company and a mortgage company as well. And our license number for the Power Is Now Real Estate Services is 1980407. We're licensed in the state of California. And our license number for the mortgage services we provide for the state of California only is 1435243, 1435243. We are mortgage brokers, approved of many lenders, and we're making the American dream a reality for many people. I am a real estate broker and a mortgage broker, and my individual license number for the state of California as a real estate broker is 0114384. And as a real estate broker, that's actually that was as a real estate broker. And as a mortgage broker, it is through the MLS, and the license number is 461807. 461807. So again, go to thepowersnow.com, thepowersnow.com, check out the magazine, look at the About Us statement, and just learn more about what we are doing in the community and our efforts to help consumers become homeowners, and to support real estate professionals as well who are desiring to work with buyers and just to put as many people in homes as possible. Homeownership rate is so low, particularly for minorities, and it will continue to fall, especially as interest rates continue to rise. I'm not sure what we're going to do about it other than to build more houses because inventory is so low. But there are people out there, real estate professionals like those of you who are joining us today on Facebook Live and those listening on Blog Talk Radio, who are committed to helping others get into homeownership because it makes a tremendous difference in their lives. So let's get right to our main subject of the hour, and that is the lawsuit against Ocwen, Altisource, and Deutsche Bank. Caroline Peet is the executive director and former housing director of Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California, formerly known as Fair Housing Marin. She co-authored the 2010 Marin County Analysis of Impediments, AI, and gave inputs to AIs of other counties. She has given numerous presentations on the history of segregation and affirmative furthering fair housing to local, state, and national audiences. And prior to her association with Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California, Ms. Peet was the executive director of Centennial Fair Housing in Oakland. She graduated from Wesleyan University with a BA in philosophy and earned a master's in management of human resources at the Florence Heller School of Social Welfare at Brandeis University. She is a board member of the National Fair Housing Alliance and has been working with the fair housing field, working in the fair housing field since 1987. Welcome, Caroline, to the Power Is Now Power Lunch.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here, Eric.
Well, the pleasure is all mine. And this is not your first rodeo here on the Power Is Now. You've been here before. And I appreciate you and Kevin Stein and just all the fair housing organization, Lisa Rice, for leveraging the Power Is Now platform to educate and empower both real estate professionals and consumers with information that they should know about in terms of political action and social justice and housing. And what we focus on here is providing information about programs on how to get into a home, which is what it's all about. So thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us today.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be back. And I should just say that Lisa Rice, who is now the president and CEO of the National Fair Housing Alliance, sends her regards.
Oh my goodness. We're going to have her on the show. I mean, we have to now. Last time we talked to her, she was executive vice president, I think. So now as president, oh my goodness. Congratulations, Lisa Rice, on a well-deserved appointment at the top. She has been really an incredible leader and a spokesman for homeowners, homeownership and advocacy of homeowners. And that's, well, Caroline, please forgive me for mispronouncing your last name.
Caroline works fine, so we can go with the first name.
All right. Well, you guys have a lot happening down there in Northern California, and so do we down here in Southern California. We have a fair housing conference coming up in Riverside on April 19th. Tell us about yours.
I would be more than happy to do that. So, as you know, and as many people know, this is the this year marks the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act, which happened exactly a week or so after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, and happened as a result of that. And so we are having a really big conference. I want to actually share with you. Let's see if I can manage to do this, but I'd like to share with you the flyer that tells you a little bit about our two major speakers. So
take your time while we're waiting on Caroline to come back on. As you can see, folks, the Fair Housing Conference 2018 is going to be conducted. Caroline should be coming back on here shortly. The 2018 conference for the Northern California Fair Housing is coming up. And if you're down there, it's going to be on my birthday, April 25th, from 8:30 to 5:30. And so hopefully Caroline can reconnect and tell us more about the conference. And then we're going to get into the main subject of the hour, and that is the lawsuit that has just taken place by the Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California, the National Association of Housing Alliance, and 18 other civil rights groups have gotten involved in a lawsuit with Ocwen, Altisource, and one other, Deutsche Bank. And so she's going to give us the details about that, folks. And you're going to be surprised on what these organizations, these companies are up to. And why the lawsuit was necessary. So while we're waiting on her to come back, I want to tell you about another conference that's coming out. If you go to fairhousing.net, you will find the Fair Housing Council of Riverside, fairhousing.net. And we are having a Fair Housing Council event, or housing event, on the 19th of this month, the 19th of month. It's going to be 19th of April. And it's the Fair Housing Council of Riverside hosting the 2018 Housing Conference on Thursday, April 19th. And it's an all-day event from 7:30 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon. While you're pulling it up, I just want to acknowledge some of our guests that are on Facebook. Al Rogers, extraordinary agent out of Long Beach and Orange County. Tony Bees, our Hope Ambassador, is in the house. Joey Cope, thanks for joining. Walter Lowes. Hey, Walter, man, you become part of the faithful that join us every week. Thanks for tuning in. Sylvia, Danita Young, extraordinary broker out of Northern California, Berkeley. Shalanda Chappelle, agent out of Marietta with the Power Is Now, and so is Sylvia. Robin Davis out of Antioch. Folks, you're looking to buy real estate. Well, check out Antioch and call Robin Davis. Others are joining. David Burnside, Danan Burnside out of San Bernardino. Thank you all for joining us today. Please share the link. I appreciate it if you would make sure this information that we're sharing about this particular lawsuit that's ongoing is we want to get the word out about what these financial institutions are doing. Caroline, go ahead and share your screen if you're ready.
So it's happening on April 25th. We have a couple of amazing speakers in the morning, that plenary speakers. One is James Perry, who is the president and CEO of the Winston-Salem Urban League. We're jetting him across the country. He was such a hit last year. And he used to also be the president and CEO of the Greater New Orleans Fair Housing Action Center. He was the leader of that organization, both pre and post Katrina. So he really was in the thick of things and saw all kinds of things that really played into all the racial inequalities and so on. And we also have James Lipsitz, who is he's head of Black Studies program at UCSB and somebody that I've known for many years, and we're really excited to have him join us. So he's going to be one of the speakers. And then in the afternoon, we have a number of different panels that are going to be, I think, just really great. It took me a while to, pull together the panelists for this, but the first panel is a panel on tenants' rights, and it's specifically about tenants' rights and protections. And it's a session that's going to basically unpack all the different housing-related bills that we've seen that are recently passed, as well as what's on the horizon, and how they apply locally, and how various organizing groups can work together. So that's going to be one of the first panels. We also have, for housing developers, realtors, lenders, sustainable home ownership is going to be the focus of that one. And it's going to be focusing on policies that foster inclusive communities and best practices for transparency and responsible borrowing and lending. And we're going to have some that, and Kevin Stein from California Reinvestment Coalition is going to be joining us there. We have later in the afternoon, we have a session on gentrification and displacement, which is going to be looking at racial equity and land preservation and how policies and institutions limit mobility and equity building and other issues. And then we're going to have a session also on affirmatively furthering fair housing, looking at local history, how policies affect access to transportation, education, affordable housing, and how all of those policies have shaped the segregated living patterns that we see today, and the tools to further fair housing in our communities, particularly related to supporting affordable housing, public schools, and transportation policies that will begin to reverse those patterns of segregation and lack of access. And then finally, we're going to have a panel on strengthening housing advocacy through alliance building, and about how to have those difficult conversations in neighborhoods with neighbors about housing in our neighborhoods, that about debunking myths, stereotypes, and misinformation that often lead to fear and exclusion. And so we're hoping that that will be a sort of a nice way to end the day, to try to bring everybody together. It's a really exciting day and a really, really very exciting agenda. And so I'm excited it's one of those things where it's a lot of hard work and it's all coming together, and I really want people to be able to experience it. So April 25th, and they can find out more about it on our website at fairhousingnorcal.org, fairhousingnorcal.org.
And that's fairhousingnorcal.org. Now, congratulations, Caroline, for putting together such a comprehensive event. And geez, I wish that you could fill a convention center with these. What do you expect? Well, first of all, who will attend this event? Who are the participants?
So, the of course, advocates will be coming. There will be various attorneys who are interested in some of the legal issues, developers. We're hoping that we'll get a lot of people, also lenders, developers, real estate professionals, people who are interested in what's happening in their communities. We're actually hoping that a lot of people around the Bay Area will be coming. And that includes also the local jurisdictional staff, and we're hoping as well elected officials will come as well.
Well, I think the timing is perfect on the heels of the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of the Fair Housing Act, and to talk about these issues, because fair housing is still an issue, right? And it would be great if we had just more of the general public that would attend these conferences. Is the conference free, by the way, or is there a cost?
So there is a cost. It's given the fact that we're having it at a hotel and we're having a wonderful buffet and so on, it's $45 for the entire day. And really, there are also scholarships available for people who are who don't have the money. They can definitely ask about that. And there's information about that on our websites as well.
Well, fantastic. So why don't we start, before we transition to the lawsuit, for anyone who would like to learn more about this directly and speaking to Carolina, you can reach out to her, you can call her, provide your telephone number and email address now, especially for those who will be listening on Blog Talk Radio.
Sure. So although I'm not the best person on the logistics, you can always try to reach me and I'm happy to forward it to the right person in our agency. And my email address is my last name, Petey, which is spelled P-E-A-T-T-I-E at fairhousingnorcal.org. So again, that's Petey, P like Paul, E-A, two T's like Tom, I-E at fairhousingnorcal.org. And my phone number is 483-7552. That's my direct line, 415-483-7552.
All right. Now, today we're going to be talking about the lawsuit. And let's see if we can get that PowerPoint up. Mm-hmm. And while you're working on that, I'm going to share some information about the Fair Housing event and down here in Southern California. So go ahead and see if we can transition with your screen, get the PowerPoint up. So as I was saying before the technical difficulties, the Fair Housing Council of Riverside. Oh, it's working. It's working. It's coming up.
Let me just give you the right view.
All right. The Fair Housing Council of Riverside County will host the 2018 Housing Conference on Thursday, April 19th. Not only has April been designated as a Fair Housing Month, and most people don't know that, by the way, April is National Fair Housing Month. It marks the 50th anniversary of the passage of the Fair Housing Act. And so Riverside has, I think this is their third or fourth conference that will be held at the Riverside Convention Center. And we certainly hope that you'll come out and participate. Yours truly will be one of the panelists speaking at the convention and at the conference. And we're going to be conducting discussions on many of the same issues that Caroline has presented in this presentation today. So check out the 2018 Housing Conference in Southern California, Riverside, and you can go to fairhousing.net to get more information, or you can reach out to them at 1-800-655-1812, 1-800-655-1812. Everyone is invited, real estate professionals, attorneys, advocates, learn what's going on in regard to tenants' rights, housing, discrimination, all of those things. Where are we after 50 years of the Fair Housing Act? Where are we today? So I'm looking forward to it. And again, that's going to be April 19th, all day. Now, Caroline, your event is on my birthday.
Happy birthday, Eric. Great.
Yes, yes. I'll be a young 25. No, I mean, not really. 26. Now, actually, I'll be turning 56 on the 25th of April. So if I come down there, I'm looking forward to a celebration. All right?
It's a deal. Come here and we will celebrate.
All right. So next up, folks, is this lawsuit. And man, I'm so happy that people can learn about this through Facebook, that topics like this are taking place on Facebook and on online radio, because you're not getting much, I will say, media attention about it. And it's sad because people need to know what's going on. So, Caroline, tell us about this lawsuit.
Absolutely. I'm more than happy to do that. And I really do appreciate the opportunity to talk about this with your viewers. So I want to actually show you some maps and some pictures of some of the results of our investigation. But just to give you a quick overview, NAFA, which is the National Fair Housing Alliance, and Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California, which I'll call FANCY, and 18 other fair housing organizations filed a lawsuit at the beginning of February, February 1st of this year. And we filed it against Deutsche Bank, Ocwen Financial, and Altasource, alleging housing discrimination in 30 different metro areas across the country for failing to maintain and market its foreclosed bank-owned, or sometimes you hear about it as real estate or REO, real estate owned or REO properties in communities of color. And one of the reasons we there were a number of reasons why we did it, but we felt it was fitting to file the this lawsuit during Black History Month in February. So it was a result of actually a multi-year investigation undertaken by the National Fair Housing Alliance and its partners since 2010. The group had filed an administrative complaint back in 2014 and amended to add cities, additional cities and additional evidence in 2014, in 2016, in 2017. And the National Fair Housing Alliance met with legal counsel in 2015, sharing photos, photographs of the disparity in treatment of homes in white versus communities of color, and didn't see any improvement. So, and they also met with representatives from Ocwen and Altasource to share photos illustrating those problems. And there were no improvements with maintenance and marketing identified after the meeting. So the fair housing groups decided, added these companies to their complaints. So now, with that is sort of the giving you the overview there. I want to tell you a little bit about show you some pictures and tell you a little bit more and get into the detail. So Fair Housing, or FANCY, Fair Housing Advocates of Northern California, we actually joined in a little bit later. We came in 2014 and began investigating Deutsche Bank. And as I mentioned, it's part of this larger nationwide investigation involving all these other fair housing organizations. And one of the things that, banks always claim that they are preserving and maintaining their properties to the same standard of maintenance that they find in that particular neighborhood. And we took photos. You'll see that did not turn out to be the case for Deutsche Bank, because we're looking at routine maintenance on the outside of the bank-owned homes. We didn't go inside. We're looking at the outside of the homes. So just to give you an idea of what banks are and services are supposed to do, they're paid to mow lawns, remove trash and debris left by the previous owner or litterer, secure doors and windows to make sure that you don't have vandalism and squatters. Obviously, as you can imagine, boarded doors and windows and overgrown grass and so on can all detract from the property and the home's curb appeal to the potential buyers. So we looked at 39 different maintenance and marketing factors that we had on a checklist. When I say we, I mean all of the organizations that were involved in this lawsuit, and the investigator would just mark yes or no as to whether there was a deficiency that was present in the property. So to just make it very clear, one broken window would count as one deficiency, and it didn't matter how many broken windows, three broken deficient windows would also count as one deficiency. And we took photos of not only the REO or the bank-owned home, but also the neighbors on both sides and across the street. So what was the methodology for our investigation? Well, we looked at the same things, right? We looked at curb appeal having to do with trash and leaves and overgrown grass and so on. And I will just say that in California, Eric, I know you can appreciate this, that in California, overgrown grass and dead grass and shrubbery and so on isn't just about curb appeal. It's also about a fire hazard. So it becomes more than just, does it look bad? The structure involved, we looked at the broken windows, broken doors, damaged fences, roofs, and holes and so on. Signage, we looked to see, are there trespassing and warning signs that say bank-owned, auction, or foreclosure signs? Are there for sale signs that are missing or broken or discarded? We looked at the paint and the siding. We looked at the graffiti. Was there graffiti there? Was there peeling? Was there chipped paint? Was there damaged siding? And of course, were the gutters missing or broken, hanging, and so on? And water damage. Was there mold and discoloration? And utilities, were the utilities tampered with? So Fancy looked at a total, we scored a total of 22 Deutsche Bank properties in the Richmond and Vallejo, California metro area. And I'm actually going to show you a map so you can see where these properties were. And I will just tell you that of those 22 properties, let me interrupt myself for a second and mention that we looked at we visited far more Deutsche Bank properties than we actually scored, because whenever there was somebody, whenever it wasn't entirely clear that Deutsche Bank, that it was an REO property, so for example, if we saw somebody inside it, whether they were squatters or whether they seemed to be legitimately there, we did not knock on the doors or go inside or score the property in any way. So these are the ones that were left vacant and where nobody was there. So we had five Deutsche Bank properties that were located in predominantly Latino communities, and 13 of them were located in a community with a majority of non-white residents. And then four Deutsche Bank properties were located in predominantly white communities. So here are some of the things that came up. Almost a quarter of the Deutsche Bank properties in the neighborhoods of color had 10 or more maintenance deficiencies, while none of the properties in predominantly white neighborhoods had 10 or more deficiencies. And just to be clear, we didn't actually have, you'll see a map with red dots and orange dots and green dots that show how many deficiencies that had, and there's not a way of showing on the map that whenever there were more than 10 maintenance deficiencies, which there were in communities of color. Fully half of the properties and neighborhoods of color had half or more of the property covered in dead grass, while none of the properties in the white neighborhoods had the same problem. Half of the properties in neighborhoods of color had a broken or boarded window. None of the properties that we were looking at in white neighborhoods had the same problem. And about 44% of the properties had no professional for sale sign marketing the home in neighborhoods of color, whereas 75% of the Deutsche Bank properties in white communities had for sale signs. So those right there were some of the sort of major findings. There were definitely others, but I'm highlighting some of these for you. Okay, so here we have the map that I was talking about. And I want you to be able to, I want to kind of give you an overview of what you're looking at. In the purple areas that you see, those are the non-white areas where 50% or more of those areas are communities of color, are inhabited by people of color. And if you look at the little circles, the green ones are the ones that were in good shape. There were only 0 to 4 deficiencies. And the orange ones were okay, 5 to 9 deficiencies. And then the red ones are the ones that are 10 or more, have 10 or more deficiencies. So you can pretty much see right away, right, that you look at, hopefully you can see my pointer here. So here is a red one, here is a red one, here is a red one, here is a red one. So all of these are happening, you'll see only in the purple areas, right? So they're only happening in communities of color. And then you take a look, like where are, so nothing in communities of white communities, there are no red ones there. But then you see, and I wanna also talk about why you only see a few, just a couple of, we only had 4 in communities, in white communities, right? And I wanna talk about why there are only 4 foreclosed properties in white communities in a little bit. So one of the things that I also want you to notice is that while there are a couple of green ones in the communities of color, really there are a whole lot more orange ones that have 5 to 9 deficiency, and along with red, the red circles, right? And so I also want to point out that a couple of things. For example, so down here in Brentwood, for example, this is actually in a white neighborhood, and it's an orange one. You think, oh, it wasn't doing so well. So Deutsche Bank, I wasn't doing so well. I will tell you that Deutsche Bank in general didn't do a great job overall, but they just did a much worse job in communities of color. And this, for example, this property in Brentwood, which is 59% white, so you know that it was sort of on the cusp. It had actually really good curb appeal, though it still had 5 to 9 deficiencies. Now, then there were these two in Benicia. Both of these had quite good, also excellent curb appeal. And the only outlier was Martinez, which didn't have great curb appeal, but it wasn't exactly clear with it, whether Deutsche Bank had taken taken control of this. There wasn't signage and the curtains were drawn and so on. So it's not true of the orange dots in communities of color. They did not have good curb appeal. And you might say, well, so what if they don't have good curb appeal? If they don't have good curb appeal, it means they're not being marketed well. They're not going to sell. They're going to be sitting on the market. It's going to drag down the market value of the surrounding neighborhood properties and so on. And I also want to mention that there was you can't see it very well, but there was actually a green dot in Antioch that scored high. But the property, and this is in a community of, it is this one. You can see it perfectly well. Okay, so this is one that was in a community of color, and you can see green dot. You think, oh, great. But what's interesting about this is that it is a good property, built in 2004, in good shape. And guess what? The garage door was totally unsecured, which means that a vandal could get in to the whole house. It invited vandals in, and it was not a good situation at all, that we could have just waltzed in if we wanted. So that gives you a little picture of what it looked like. I want to also share with you some pictures of what it was like when we were out there taking photographs. So here's a Deutsche Bank home in a Latino community in Oakley, California. Oh, let me go one back up just for people who aren't familiar with the Bay Area. I just want to point out that this area in here is in Solano County. This is part of the Vallejo MSA right in here. And then this area over here is the Richmond area or Contra Costa County. Okay. So I just wanted to make that clear. So here's a home in a Latino community in Oakley, California. And take a look at this front yard. It's just overgrown, completely dead. The backyard's even worse. You can see all that trash and that's just sitting there, potentially attracting rodents, lots of dead grass, which, as you know, if you live in California, is a horrible fire hazard. And this is a completely overgrown yard that Deutsche Bank has left. This porch is covered in all these dead leaves, and you know, it's not great. This is not great for marketing. This is a Deutsche Bank home in a majority non-white community in Pittsburgh, California that we scored in 2016. So there is a sign there. You can see that there is somebody marketing. So that's a good thing. But the front yard's totally dead with, you know, all kinds of weeds interspersed and overgrown shrubbery. The side of the home is overgrown. Here's another Deutsche Bank Aquan Altosaurus home in a Latino community in Richmond, California. You can see right away the boarded up window. And here's the trash in the front yard before you get to the front door. More trash as we get to the back of the house, and lots of overgrown grass. And this is a pretty phenomenal amount of trash. Can you imagine marketing this property? Yes, we'd like you to buy this house. And look what it looks like. So it's you know, outrageous that something like this would be listed for sale. It's just, you know, unconscionable. Here's a Deutsche Bank home in a Latino community in Pittsburgh, California in 2015. And so you can see various things out of place. You can see this gutter that's just completely disconnected, and this is broken. And it doesn't take much to fix that. On the side of the house, lots of trash, lots of debris. And I love the fact that there's just like a broken fence. Oh, we'll cover it up with a broken fence. Does not, you know, it's just not a good sight. And here's another one, lots of trash and debris littering the yard. So here we wanted to also share with you some of the nice properties. When you look at the neighbors, how they're taking great care of their homes and yards, and they have to live next to a property of Deutsche Bank's that's being, you know, that's horribly, you know, that looks horrible and is all, you know, full of trash and so on. So you can imagine what that must be like for them. And here is a Deutsche Bank in a majority non-white community in Antioch, California, in that we investigated in 2014. Dead shrubs and branches. I love this. It's bad enough that there's a boarded up window, but they couldn't even really board it properly. Like, it was like, oh, we'll just slap on this piece of wood and maybe it'll cover some of the window. You know, we got most of it. So this is really bad news. So that's a perfect example of not only were they boarding it up, which is terrible, but they couldn't even do that right. And the home shed, and you know, there's the shed debris inside. Not great when kids are running around and playing and, you know, oh, this is a cool, fun place to play. Well, maybe not so healthy to be there. And there's a pile of trash among dead shrubbery, and it definitely should have been, disposed of and removed from the property. There's like old paint cans and so on, and that's toxic stuff. Here's another one. In the backyard, Deutsche Bank failed to secure this home's pool. So imagine, number one, this is a terrible place for if children end up in this backyard and what could happen if they fall in there. And second of all, they've got this water that's sitting, a little bit of water, that's a great place to have, it's a breeding ground for mosquitoes. So that's not a good thing to have there at all. Here's another example of Deutsche Bank failing to maintain its, you know, the neighbors are taking pride in their homes. They're doing all the things they should be. But it's terrible when they have to live next to an eyesore. So I want to show you now some examples of the Deutsche Bank homes in the white communities and what that was like. Here's one in Benicia, California. Looks perfectly nice. And look, the backyard. There's not trash and debris. It looks like it's been mowed recently. It's not all dead. Here's another one in Brentwood, California. It's also in good shape, and you can see that there is a, for sale sign, so it's being actively marketed as well. This has a pool, has a swimming pool, but this home's backyard is got a lock on it, and it's secured properly. So not the same kind of hazard that you see in the other picture that I showed you in a neighborhood of color. And finally, this backyard is also free of trash and debris. So that's gives you a really good sense of what that looks like. And I just want to say, you know, the other thing I wanted to throw out is that, you know, blight created by Deutsche Bank results in decline in home values. It deepens the racial wealth gap and inequality in the U.S. It causes safety hazards for people. You've seen, you know, places where there could be insects, rodents that they cause disease. And of course, as I discussed, I already mentioned, fire hazards. And that has impacts and on people's health who are in the neighborhood, both mental and physical. There's very definitely a connection. There have been studies that show the connection between living in a blighted neighborhood and your health. And, you know, of course there are, you know, not only does it take a toll on the neighbors when they see that kind of blight, but then what also has happening quite a bit is that REOs are bought up by investors who don't care about the property. They don't care about the neighborhood. And that's another sort of wave of, you know, sort of those are issues that we are very, very concerned. And this is, of course, all in addition to the people who have lost their homes through foreclosure. So I just wanted to give you sort of the whole picture of what that looks like. I also wanted to mention, and I'm going to take this off of sharing now, I think.
While you're doing that, Caroline, I have a couple of questions. First, these pictures were taken between 2014 and 2016. The lawsuit was filed. You guys joined the lawsuit. I can only imagine, tell me I'm wrong or right, if the banks have gone out since the pictures and the case was filed to fix all these issues. Have these properties been repaired or brought up to, safety standards? And are they still on the market? What's happened with these properties?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So while I can't tell you what's happened to each and every property, one of the reasons why we filed the suit is because there wasn't a whole lot happening with those properties. And we continue to see the same problems that we had been seeing earlier, you know, and for us, it was 2014, 2015, 2016. But for the National Fair Housing Alliance and some of the other organizations, they had started investigating in 2010. So they were looking at things from 2010. So in the intervening time, and they actually sat, NAFA sat down, staff sat down with attorneys from Deutsche Bank and said, look, we're here, let's show you some of these photos. We want you to see what we're seeing, and explain what some of the deficiencies were. And there was not any action taking, not any definitive action taken. And that's why we filed the complaint. When I say filed the complaint, we had previously filed a complaint with HUD, but that's why we filed the lawsuit this February.
You know, there are countless articles and studies that show that neighborhoods and predominantly African-American communities don't appreciate and value like neighborhoods in white communities. And this could be one of the factors when there is probably a higher degree or higher percentage of homes that go into foreclosures in black neighborhoods. This would add to the fact the banks, when they do take possession of those properties, are not doing anything to maintain those properties or even to aggressively sell those properties
right
to a family. But instead, they're selling them in bulk to hedge funds who then convert what were communities that had a significant number of owners now represent a community of renters. And that brings a whole other set of problems in communities.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And you can imagine what it was like when I was, you know, living in one of those properties that's well kept up. And I mean, because first of all, that shows that people are still trying, you know, in those communities of color, they're trying to keep their places looking nice. And then right next door, they have such a terrible looking property, and it must be incredibly discouraging. And I did talk to, I talked to neighbors who had various problems and sometimes vandals, and they would be trying to, you know, contact their local police and, you know, various other, municipal, sort of officials and so on, saying we have a real problem here, but without having a whole lot of results. And that's really about the you know, Deutsche Bank and other lenders who are letting these, who are not doing a good job of maintaining and marketing these homes. And I, you know, this is a good time for me to just jump in here to say, this is not the first time that this has happened, where equity has been leached away from communities of color. I mean, it seems like every single time there's an attempt to kind of level out the playing field, there's something else that is that African Americans or other people of color have to deal with. You know, back in the 1930s from the 1930s to the 1950s, there were a number of different federal programs that were available to help people gain home ownership and access and become, you know, like sustainable loans and so on, that were, you know, cheap loans for to allow people to move into homes, but only for white people. And then in 1968, you know, 50 years ago, the Fair Housing Act was passed. So that was great, and it gave African Americans and Latinos and other people of color the same opportunity to access to home ownership, but not the means to do so. And here I will just throw out a book that came out in the past year that is really worth my bringing up here, and that is Richard Rothstein's book, The Color of Law. And I'll just give a little plug here and say that back in 2015, we had Richard Rothstein come to our Fair Housing Conference and give a talk on precisely the substance of this conversation of this discussion and the fact that the segregated living patterns that we see today has everything to do with the opportunities that were not given to African Americans, even though as of 1968, we had the means to, the opportunity with the Fair Housing Act. And then there was the practice of redlining, right? So banks would take these, you know, red lines and say, we're not going to lend within these neighborhoods. And they were neighborhoods of color. So we have the redlining that basically didn't allow African-Americans and other people of color to own. And then what really kind of took the cake is that then these same, finally, you know, when by saving and lots of hard work, there would be, you know, equity, that gradual building up of equity. And then these same communities were targeted for subprime lending. So all kinds of subprime loans targeted to communities of color, and you've heard about it as reverse redlining, of course. And that was what led to the crash of 2008. And now we have this, you know, sort of house of cards, this sort of domino effect. And now all of these foreclosures, more in communities of color than any other, and certainly than in white communities. Remember that map I showed you where there were only four in the white communities of the Deutsche Bank, and all the other ones were there that were in communities of color. Now this is yet another way of leeching that the equity away from those communities by failing to maintain and market those REO homes. So you can just see this. You look at the history of how you know, both the sort of institutional policies that we've had in this country, as well as the policies of private banks, have just it's like, you know, every time, you know, there's been an effort to try to gain equity in communities, they're just something, another roadblock. So I just wanted you to be able to see the whole picture, not just this piece of the REO piece, which is why we're so worked up about it.
Well, I'm glad you're worked up about it. And I stay worked up about it every Tuesday afternoon and Tuesday night and Thursdays night on the Powers Now radio. What you have just, the history, the great history you've just laid out for us is the primary reason why there's such a huge wealth gap between African-Americans and whites. And it's because of the denial, the limited access, the policies that took place beginning in 1934 when the Fair Housing Act was passed, and which led to the the Federal Housing Administration, an FHA loan providing the low down payment, the low interest rates, and then 1944, the VA loan. And African-Americans and people of color could not participate in any of those programs because of redlining, other Jim Crow laws, and other segregational policies that existed throughout these United States. And the most recent data I have is from the California Association of Realtors, where they said that over less than 2% of the millions of loans that were originated from 1934 to 1968 were made to African Americans. And it took legislation, like it has always taken, to get things done, to create opportunities for people. It has taken legal action to get things done. It took the Civil Rights Act, it took the Fair Housing Act, it took the Emancipation Proclamation, heck, they're just to free black folks, right? It's always taken legislation and legal action. And so with what you've just laid out for us and the banks and their failure to maintain these properties, the risk that it represents to the communities, the impact that it has on values, on property values in the communities, what is the hope? What are we hoping to achieve? What do we want the judgment to say or do to these financial institutions?
Great question. I'm really glad that you asked it. We want the banks to invest in the very communities that they have blighted. And, you know, in this, the case that I was talking about with Deutsche Bank, we want to make sure that they help stabilize those communities. We want to make sure that they are play an integral part of making them whole. You know, whether that means, and it's going to depend on the community, whether that means helping build parks, whether it means supporting the local housing counseling agencies that provide foreclosure prevention counseling, other programs that help revitalize community. We need them to invest in those communities to be able to make a difference and not just kind of sugarcoat it and do a little Band-Aid action. And I also think that it's really, I think that be leading up to a question that would answer this, but I have to say it right now, which is that, you know, there are so many in this particular time and with this particular administration, there are so many sort of incursions and sort of attacks on consumer protections. And, you know, I'll give the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau as just an example. That was something that a lot of advocates worked very hard to support, to make sure that the CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, would be not only established, but would continue to look out for consumers in a way that no other regulatory agency does. And there have been so many efforts to undermine this agency and so many efforts to, you know, attack its, you know, ability to do any enforcement action and so on. And a lot of that has to do with, you know, who the administration puts at the head of that that agency. So one of the things that I'm hoping is that there's greater awareness. And the other thing about this particular lawsuit is we want this to be a call to sort of like a wake up call for people. There are some people who are already aware of these issues, but we want everybody to become aware of these issues and how it affects them. Because not having agencies that are looking out for consumers that are not sort of watchdog agencies is a problem for everybody.
Well, I agree with you. And we need fair housing advocates like your organization and others to be on the front lines, because those of us who are in the industry as real estate agents and brokers, as lenders, you know, the challenge is investing the time and resources to be politically engaged while at the same time running our business and making money to provide for our families. And so one way I know that we can ensure that the right thing is happening for consumers is, number one, being politically active and engaged, two, supporting organizations like yours that are filing the lawsuits, that are holding banks and our government accountable to the protections that they should be providing, and providing a voice, sharing the news, the information, like we want everyone to do today, who is watching, listening on Blog Talk, who are watching here on Facebook. Please take a moment and share this link to everyone you know in real estate, thinking about buying a home, just consumers in general. They ought to be aware that it took a lawsuit to force these banks to address these issues in these communities. And they didn't do it simply because they were Black communities. And that's, I mean, at least the evidence points to that. And I certainly want to hear the other side of the story. I mean, do you know what are they saying is the justification for essentially abandoning these properties and leaving them as hazards to children and to families in those neighborhoods?
Well, you can probably imagine it ranges from no comment to that's incorrect. Where there's no difference in the way that we're marketing and maintaining those homes. And so, you know, it's going to be a process to, you know, as we move forward to go through the evidence and show, here are the things that we're seeing, here are the differences that we're seeing in these communities, and there is a difference between that there is a difference between the way in which they're treating communities of color versus white communities. So, and by the way, thank you. I want to also add one thing, which is that I want to thank you for not only saying, you know, that people should be, you know, looking into, you know, supporting organizations like ours. And I would welcome that support. There is, of course, on our website, fairhousingnorcal.org. There are lots of ways to support us. You know, people who are interested in becoming a board member, people who are interested in donating, people who are interested in becoming a tester or an investigator. So all kinds of ways that people can become involved with us. And also, I do know that there's a call to action for the National Fair Housing Alliance, and their call to action for the 50th is for folks to join the National Fair Housing Alliance to be part of the fight against housing discrimination. And there, I'll give their website as well, which is nationalfairhousing.org. Again, that's nationalfairhousing.org/join. So thanks for letting me give that plug for both of our agencies.
No problem, Caroline. I am a member, as you know. I'm on the board of directors of the Riverside Fair Housing Council, and I am very proud to be engaged now for a number of years. And I've had Lisa Rice on the show, and we're going to have her back on now as president of this incredible organization. And folks, go to nationalfairhousing.org and just check out the information. What I also appreciate about what they do is they provide tools and resources for real estate professionals and anyone who wants to advocate for housing in their community. These are from flyers to audio to videos that you can post on your website to promote fair housing. And so we are using some of those images in our magazine and our radio platform. So there's a lot of great tools and resources and information about fair housing and the work that's being done to protect the right for access to housing. And because, you know what, it's something we shouldn't take for granted, is it? I mean, it's like the Holocaust, and that I know many people who are Jews who said never they will never forget. They commemorate, you know, what took place because they don't want to forget that it happened. Number two, they don't want to see it happen again. And so we have to be mindful that we live in just a crazy world. Anything can happen. Changes could take place. Administrations can change. Laws can change. And before you know it, we think we've made 10 steps forward and we've made now it looks like 10 or 20 steps backwards. And a lot of people are feeling that way now with a lot of things that are happening with the Voting Rights Act and some other things that are just in question now with the mission and the mandate for HUD and housing and what Ben Carlson is doing. And so there's a lot. It seems like our civil rights and our right to housing is under attack. And with banks not being forced to do what they should do, whether it be as an REO, managing an REO, or adding credit overlays that make it more difficult for people to qualify, instead of adhering to the underwriting guidelines as established by Congress, you know, I think that is another form of discrimination and government policies or policies that are being supported and allowed by the government of banks that really discriminate. It's not intentional. It's unintentional. What do you call it? Disparate impact. And their intent to have a well-performing servicing portfolio, and nobody's arguing with them about having a performing portfolio of loans, but adding additional requirements and continuing to do so in order to achieve that goal is having a disparate impact on people of color and making it even more difficult for them to achieve homeownership goals, added to the fact of rising interest rates and rising costs. And I could go on. I'm going to stop.
Right on is all I have to say.
So, Carolina, anything else you would like to share in regard to this? I think that when do we think this lawsuit would be over? What's the goal here?
That is a million-dollar question that I absolutely cannot answer. I can tell you that there are a couple of lawsuits like this now. It's not just Deutsche Bank. The same groups pretty much filed a lawsuit against Fannie Mae in December of 2016. And so it'll be interesting to see how that goes. But Fannie Mae actually filed a motion to dismiss. And on March 21st of this year, the judge, this was in the Ninth Circuit Court, the judge issued an order that denied in part and granted in part Fannie Mae's motion. By and large, it was a good decision for us. They denied the motion, which is to dismiss on the grounds that the National Fair Housing Alliance and the various groups sufficiently pled organizational standing and adequately alleged diversion of resources and frustration of mission. So the complaint, and that the complaint had there was a valid Fair Housing Action, Fair Housing Act claim, sorry. And so that's moving forward. So we'll see how the Fannie Mae, the Fannie Mae lawsuit and the Deutsche Bank lawsuit progress. It's going to be a long, hard battle. There are other complaints that are right now HUD complaints against Bank of America. I'm trying to think of Bank of America is another complaint that is right now filed with HUD. And so there have been other complaints that have been filed against lenders for failing to maintain and market in communities of color the same way they do in white communities against a number of lenders. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens to those as we progress forward. But as to when they will either whether there'll be a verdict or a final decision or whether there'll be a settlement, time will tell.
Well, we're certainly going to reach out to the plaintiffs on that lawsuit with Fannie Mae and see what more we can learn about it and what Fannie Mae is up to. And I appreciate you sharing that with us and just sharing your entire presentation. It's been very interesting at the least, and it's probably made a lot of people angry at the worst because of what's happening. And thank you for taking time to share with us about what's going on. For anyone interested in, again, reaching out to you, please, if you could at this time, share your telephone number, again, an email address. So they can drop me an email if they want to learn more or perhaps become a tester or an investigator or a board member of your organization. Please share that information at this time.
Okay. So probably the easiest thing would be to go to our website, which is www.fairhousingnorcal.org. Again, it's fairhousingnorcal.org. And people who want to email me directly can do so at pd@fairhousingnorcal.org. And let me spell PD for you. It's PEATTIE. And if you want to call, depending on if you want to talk to me, you can call me at 415-483-7552, 483-7552. And actually the main number is 415-457-5025, 415-457-5025.
Thank you, Caroline Petiti, or PD. Executive Director of the Fair Housing of Northern California, Advocates of Northern California. And if you're in Northern California, April 25th, check out their conference, support the organization, and tune in, next time with their, because they're coming back. Caroline has agreed to come back and share other things that are going on. And if you would like to learn more about being a tester and investigator, check it out. All Fair Housing Counseling agencies are looking for people who are willing to invest their time and resources to help fight discrimination that's still occurring today. Caroline, thank you for joining me. I'm going to close it out now, folks, with a couple of quick announcements. And number one, we will be on again tonight at 7 o'clock talking about how to buy a home with little to no money down. How to buy a home with little to no money down. We are absolutely committed here putting people into homes. And I tell you, if you don't have the FICO score you think you should have, you should tune in tonight because you probably do. If you don't think you make enough money, you should tune in tonight because you probably do. If you think you need a down payment and you don't have it, you should probably tune in tonight because you may not. It just depends on your situation. Go to thepowersnow.com and look under events, and there you'll find a series of Facebook live events that are taking place at 12 o'clock and at 7 o'clock every Tuesday. And then we're back on again on Thursdays at 12:30 to talk about real estate for sale. If you are a real estate professional and you're listening to me right now, why don't you come on Thursday, join us on Zoom. We'll send you the link and talk about listings that you have coming on the market, listings that you have on the market, and opportunities that you may have for buyers you're representing to purchase property that's on the market, things you're looking for. It's a great opportunity as real estate professionals for us all to come together to support one another, network, and share business opportunities to the general public and also to one another. So it's again tonight at 7 o'clock. How to buy a home with little to no money down. If you also go to our homebuyer seminars, we have homebuyer seminar scheduling. In fact, we have one that's scheduled in the month of May. I've actually two. We'll be coming back to Northern California to Fisher Realtors in the month of May. We have something happening down here, I believe, in Southern California at New Testament Church. That's going to be May 19th. May 19th at New Testament Church and 1941 West Florence Avenue in Los Angeles. So I'm looking forward to that. If you are connected with a church and you'd like me to come out and to speak to the congregation about housing, about the wealth gap, about how to purchase a home with little to no money down, I will come out on my own dime, and I even bring food and refreshments, folks. All you have to do is open the doors and let me in. And so I am trying to make a difference. The Power Is Now. It's all about making a difference in the area of homeownership, the people of color, low to income, moderate income people, because they're the ones that are not owning a home right now. The homeownership rate, it's 41% for African Americans, about 45% for Latinos, compared to Caucasians that are in the 70s. So we have to do something about it, because it's homeownership that is the primary driver of wealth in this country, has been since the beginning of time. It is the reason why the wealth gap exists today, because of discrimination, redlining, and just the absolute refusal to sell even to African Americans with deed restrictions and you name it. It has taken legislation, it has taken legal action, and now it takes us, it takes real estate professionals and mortgage professionals who have a desire and a heart to reach out to the communities in which they live and serve and to educate, to empower them with the tools and the resources and to let them know you can buy. And that's what we're doing here at The Power Is Now. Tune in tonight at 7 o'clock live here on Facebook and learn how you can buy a home with no money down. Well, that's another wrap of the show. Remember, we are at our best and we maximize our success when we act now. The Power Is Now. Thank you for joining me. Have an awesome day. See you soon, right now, tonight at 7 o'clock.
You've been listening to The Power Is Now Radio. For more information about the show, check us out at thepowerisnow.com or find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter.